This is Eric Kendricks, and you're listening to the Wobcast, hosted by Wobby.
Welcome back. It's another edition of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobshall, in TCO Studios at Winter Park. Bouncing off the walls in excitement with producer Nate Vaughn. What a wild, busy, crazy week it's been as the Vikings prepare to open U.S. Bank Stadium for the first time in the regular season and play their arch rival Green Bay Packers. Nate, it's been a crazy week production-wise and planning-wise for the VEN and for the Vikings. You've been kind of in the middle of a lot of it. Just not something you do every year in the NFL, open a new stadium.
Not something you do every week or every year or every bunch of years.
Every quarter century.
Yeah. Because the first regular season game in U.S. Bank Stadium, certainly the lead-up, hopefully the game itself will be quite a show.
Yes, I would imagine it will be. It's a great matchup between a pair of teams who each won road games last week. Green Bay Packers went to Jacksonville and defeated the Jaguars 27-23, and your Minnesota Vikings, ladies and gentlemen, well, they beat the Tennessee Titans, also an AFC South team. So both teams get a road win. We're here to talk about the Vikings' road win against the Titans and then preview their game against the Packers. So forget about the Jaguars-Packers game. We'll talk about Vikings-Titans, and the defense stole the show, Nate, with two touchdowns and basically shutting the Titans down. But a lot of the talk coming out of that game was the quarterback position, because going into the game, the big question was who would start. Would it be Sean Hill or Sam Bradford? It wound up being Sean Hill, and Sean Hill played pretty solid. He had 236 yards passing, had 33 passing attempts, completed, I believe, 18 or 19 of them, and did not take a sack and did not turn the ball over, most importantly. So still able to find a way to explode with seven pass completions of 15 yards or more, took care of the ball, did enough to help the Vikings get a win. That's our assessment of Sean Hill. Here is Sean's assessment of Sean Hill.
We all understand how or what it takes to win in this league. I understand how this team's built, and having gone through a year with this team and seeing how our wins happened last year, there's certainly a way to win in this league and a way to lose. And Coach Zimmer does a great job of preaching how to win, teaching how to win, with all the different scenarios that can come up in a ball game. We start that first week of OTAs, all that stuff. So talking about situation football and explaining how why we lost a game or why we won a game. We go through all those scenarios in the offseason, and he's great at that.
And get into the end zone like you like. You really made some great connections with Diggs and with Adam Thielen and with Kyle. Can you talk about your connection that you kind of made early with those three guys?
Well, those guys made tremendous plays. They made tough catches. They got open. They were great for me today. And those were huge plays to continue drives. One of them we didn't get a first down on is a big play to Thielen, but it helps flip the field position. And it was close to first down, but like I said, I mean that 20-something yards there is huge in the field position game, which was certainly part of it. But like you said, our goal is to finish more of those drives off of touchdowns. That wasn't good enough today, and something that we're certainly focused on improving.
As for Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer, once again, he said this week he's going to play his cards close to the vest. He did not announce who he's chosen to start the game on Sunday against Green Bay. Everyone's got their guess. It does us no benefit to guess. We're just going to sit back, relax, see what happens, and we'll analyze it next week. For the time being, here's what Mike Zimmer had to say about the situation on Monday, the day after the Vikings beat the Titans.
Who's your quarterback, Mike?
You'll have to wait till Sunday.
Do you know?
No comment.
Mike McCarthy said on the conference call today, he thinks it's going to be Sam Bradford. Does he have a source?
I hope not in this building. I don't know. You have to ask Mike McCarthy that. I don't know. I can't speak for him.
Regardless of who starts this Sunday, now that you've had some time with Bradford, how do you think he fits into your offense, and what's the upside with him here?
The upside is that he's a veteran, seen a lot of stuff. He throws the ball great. Got a good arm, gets the ball out quick.
Just as with last week, Nate, a compelling case can be made to start both guys. with Sean Hill. It's, hey, he played well last week. He can come in there and operate and guide the offense and play well this week.
Knows the system. Been in the system for years now.
Then you can say Sam Bradford. Well, you gave up a first and a fourth for him, so you didn't do that to have him sit on the bench. And he opens up the offense, can make all the throws.
We've heard he's picking up the playbook really quickly.
So compelling case can be made for both. And we said here on the Wobcast, Nate and I did, that if you last week we said if you play Sean Hill in Tennessee, that leaves ambiguity leading up to the Green Bay game. And here we are. It's ambiguous. We don't know who's going to play. And so that's kind of a byproduct of playing Sean Hill last week, is you don't know for sure who's going to start this week. So we'll find out on Sunday night. Ultimately, does it even matter to Green Bay? I think that's an interesting question. If you're the Green Bay Packers, you prepare for both. I know Mike McCarthy said in a press conference this week that they're anticipating it's Sam Bradford, so they're going to be prepared either way. Does it really matter to the opposing defense who plays and who doesn't? I think you could argue it does, that if you have Sam Bradford, you might run a different subset of plays than if you have Sean Hill. At the end of the day, you still got Adrian Peterson, so you're going to try and establish the run. You have some playmakers on the outside, but you're not a vertically attacking-oriented passing game anyway. So one could argue it doesn't really matter to Green Bay. Either way, it'll be interesting to see what happens, see who the Vikings play at quarterback, and then see how that quarterback plays against the Packers. Someone who plays for the Packers, running back Eddie Lacy. I have him down, Nate, as a weekly talking point. Tackling Eddie Lacy, very important in this game. Eddie Lacy, if you look back on his career against the Vikings, very good. So the Vikings need to stop that from happening here. He's a hard guy to tackle. He caught a screen pass last week in Jacksonville, and a guy was on him in a minute, bounced right off of him, and Lacy turned it into like a 22-yard gain. So I think it was a 17-yard gain, but 22 yards gained after contact because he was hit 5 yards in the backfield. So dangerous guy. You have to tackle well. He's hard to tackle. No doubt Aaron Rodgers is the main threat. But as Zim said on Monday, you have to make Green Bay one-dimensional. And if you can do that, then you have a shot.
And if you're a Vikings fan, most Vikings fans are pretty excited about the defense. Think they're playing pretty well. But if you do look at last week, they played well enough to win. Certainly got those turnovers, helped. But you also gave up 2 touchdowns to their running back, DeMarco Murray. So
I think if Eddie Lacy has 2 touchdowns on Sunday night, the Vikings are in trouble. That would be a bad indicator of how the game goes. If the Vikings can hold Eddie Lacy to under 100 and out of the end zone, I think that that's a good indicator.
If I was coach, I would tell all my players not to let any of the other team players score a touchdown.
Yes, that's a good idea.
Not to undermine Mike Zimmer, because I believe in what he's building here.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so just don't let any of them score.
Yeah. Anybody on the other team.
I think you're onto something. Someone who we do want to score a lot, Adrian Peterson. What happened in week one to Adrian? 31 yards on 19 carries. It's led some to wonder if he should be playing more in the preseason, if age is catching up to him, if all these things. And I think at the end of the day, it's Tennessee overcommitted to the run, something we've seen plenty of times. But they dedicated the day to stopping Adrian Peterson. And in my mind, the Vikings kind of made him pay for it. 236 yards passing, more than a handful of 15-yard gains through the air. I know they didn't find the end zone, partially because it got bogged down in the red zone. But if teams are going to continually stack the line of scrimmage and have 8-9-man boxes, then our quarterback's going to have 240 yards passing, and hopefully some of those yards result in touchdowns, and then teams are going to have to back off a little bit. So I'm not worried about what we saw in week one from Adrian. I think the run blocking will get better in week two. I think Adrian will have a better feel for the game in week two. I think Adrian's usually good against the Packers. And I'm not panicking off of what we saw from Adrian in week one. I think Green Bay's defense will take a look at some of the things the Vikings passing game was able to do and take note of that, and maybe that'll free some things up in the middle of the field as well. Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer said already this week that Xavier Rhodes and Sharif Floyd will not play in this game, so unless something changes on either of those two guys in terms of the injury report on Saturday, we will not have either. So while that was a surprise last week not to have Xavier Rhodes, it will not be a surprise this week. Trey Waynes has been preparing for the opportunity all week. Now, he did step into the lineup last week in Tennessee, and he had 12 tackles, had some up and down moments. Now he's going to be ready to go. A lot of people say, well, Aaron Rodgers is going to pick on Trey Waynes. And maybe he will, and maybe it will work. But I would also say, I think the Vikings understand that that's something that could happen. And I have a lot of confidence in Mike Zimmer, George Edwards, and the Vikings defense preparing for that all week and having an answer to that. I have just too much respect for the process of the game and for the matchup to think that it's going to be as easy as Rodgers finds Waynes and picks on him. I think that the Vikings will have that move covered up, and maybe Waynes will even play well and win that matchup. But I just have a feeling it's going to have to go a step beyond that. Like, the chess match is much more dynamic than just, oh, hey, here's a replacement corner, we're going to go pick on him. Now, if that happens in the middle of a game, that's one thing, because you didn't get to prepare for that all week. But the Vikings have been preparing for no Xavier Rhodes all week, and I think they're going to be ready for that. And it's not going to be as easy as just finding 26 and picking on him. Also, keep in mind, there's no rule that says Trey Waynes can't play well, given that he'll be in the starting lineup. The rivalry, Nate.
Can you feel it?
I can. Now.
I can hear it in your voice.
Thank you. Now, we have to be a little careful because Mike Zimmer, he put his own team in its own place saying this.
Now that you've had a couple of years here, your thoughts just on the Vikings-Packers rivalry, and how does it maybe compare to some other rivalries that you previously were involved in?
I don't know. It's a great rival. It's, you know, close by with the fans and all that stuff. We can't get caught up in the rivalry. All we got to do is we got to figure out who to block, when to block them, when to cover, and all that stuff. So, I think it's great for the fans. We need to beat them a lot more often for it to be a rivalry.
Buzzkill. Not really. The buzz was built up really quickly after that because we just can't help ourselves. But this is the first time that we've seen Green Bay since we beat them in their own stadium in the division championship game.
Something they probably weren't too excited about.
Right. So we're the Kings of the North right now, and I think the rivalry is as good as it's ever been, even though they have gotten the best of the Vikings for the most part over the last half decade or so. But the rivalry is good. It's good enough that Sunday Night Football, which is the most watched program in the United States for 5 years running, has decided to put it on its stage in week two as the Vikings open U.S. Bank Stadium. So to me, the rivalry is great. I love it. I agree with Coach Zimmer that for it to be a rivalry, you need to have both teams winning quite a bit. Hopefully the Vikings can start doing that. They did last year by defeating Green Bay in Green Bay to win the division title. So that is a nice chapter to add to this rivalry. The next chapter of this rivalry happens on Sunday night at U.S. Bank Stadium.
So Zimmer doesn't want us to build this game up, so we're not going to do that anymore. We're at least going to take a little break from that. We're going to talk about last week and the preseason. And a player that we have that played well last week, a player that we should be talking about more potentially, mm-hmm. and that's Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yes.
Why should we be talking about him?
Well, much maligned at first, after a great rookie season, much maligned, had a great offseason, then was injured in camp, then came back, kind of been up and down, but really good offseason for Cordarrelle, and I loved what happened with him in week one. I think something Cordarrelle did was the impetus of the Vikings' comeback in Tennessee.
Boom! The second half is underway. It's a short kick. Cordarrelle on the run from the 5. Near side, angles to the left, to the 10, to the 15, to the 20, 25, up to the 30. And Cordarrelle Patterson's to the 50. The Titans 40, and he's stopped at the Titans 36. There's a spark the Minnesota Vikings need.
61-yard kickoff return to open the second half. Vikings offense comes out and goes 3 and out. And the Vikings kick a field goal to get their first 3 points of the game. And from that point on, including that field goal, they went on a 25-0 run. Now, the reason that kickoff return was so important is because what did the offense do after the kickoff return? They went 3 and out. So if that's a 25-yard kickoff return, offense goes 3 and out and the Vikings punt, we don't know if they score or how many they score. They certainly don't go on a 25-0 run. But they did, and it started with Cordarrelle's return. I also loved that Cordarrelle had a 6-yard pass catch along the Vikings sideline.
Good looking catch, too.
It was. And he had an 8-yard run on like an end around or jet sweep. Both of those plays happened on 2nd and 7. So you're behind schedule in the down and distance, and Cordarrelle gets you back on track, gets you a first down on the rush, and gets you a 3rd and 1 on the reception. And both of those drives, two separate drives, the Vikings kicked field goals on both of those drives. So he had a large helping hand in three of the Vikings scoring drives. So I loved what I saw from Cordarrelle. I want to see more of it. And I would love to see Green Bay kick to him on Sunday night. All right, fan mail time. Don't have to wait till Monday morning mailbag to read fan mail and read our answers. We got it for you right here in the Wobcast. Four fan questions, Nate. You've got them right in front of you. Let's start with Benny.
Benny says, it was a great win against Tennessee, so great job, Wobby. Yeah,
thank you.
The VEN team, great job. Great team win, he says. So
we're part of the team.
Yeah, it's true. With one of the biggest games of the season coming up, I assume he's talking about this game against the Packers.
Well, a coach would say every game is the biggest game of the season.
Some good coach
speak
right
there. The next game is the biggest game. Yep.
With the next game coming up, what will the focus be to fix the red zone offense? He didn't see Treadwell used like he thought he would, knowing how he's been working with Hill and the second team for most of the offseason. So yeah. What say you to Benny about our red zone offense?
I believe that Laquon Treadwell will be a playmaker for the Vikings and a difference maker for the Vikings, but I do not believe that his lack of presence in the game was why the Vikings struggled in the red zone. I went back and watched. Here's what happened in the red zone. And this is very typical for teams that struggle in the red zone. Two things come up and bite you. Penalties, which the Vikings had a holding penalty in the red zone in Tennessee, and then the inability to run the ball in the red zone. It's very important to be able to run the ball in the red zone. The reason is that can oftentimes be the best way to move forward. In the passing game, the field is smaller. There is less field for the defense to defend when you're in the red zone, and it's harder to pass the ball, so that makes it more important to run the ball. The Vikings did not run the ball well in the red zone, and they committed a penalty in the red zone. That's why they went 0-for-3 in red zone scoring against Tennessee, and those are the two things that they must work on if they want to improve in the red zone.
Question number two, is it a sign of an elite team to underperform and still win comfortably? We will not be able to get away with a substandard performance this week against the Packers. The biggest danger this week being too jacked up on game day and making mental errors early. So what, if anything, can the guys do to bring the right levels of emotion and concentration this Sunday?
Well, I think that's on Coach Zimmer, and I think he probably, I mean, if what he said in the press conference is any indication, I think he probably did a pretty good job to harsh the mellow and kill the buzz. I mean, he said, this isn't a rivalry until we start winning more. I mean, okay, like there's that'll down your dapper right there. So I think Coach Zimmer's the master motivator, master at controlling his team's mindset, and I do not fear the team being too pumped up for this game. I don't think it'll be a problem. I think this team mentally will be and preparation wise will be right where they need to be to go out there and win the game. It'll be on the players to go out and execute.
Well, and you saw last year the Vikings, for the most part, playing well in prime time and big games, things like that. We already talked about them knocking off the Packers Week 17, but you start going backwards. They knocked the snot out of the Giants the week before, and that's a prime time game.
In prime time.
So there's Exhibit 1A of why that might not be such a big deal anymore.
Right. Played awful against San Francisco, got killed. Played well against Arizona and almost won, even though they didn't have their three best players on defense. And as you said, down the stretch, played well in primetime and won games, including the division championship game, which was played in primetime on the road, and they won that game.
Next question is from Mike in Phoenix.
What up?
He says, I'm not trying to second-guess Norv Turner's play calling.
I wouldn't either.
Which is probably a good idea not to do. Yeah. But it seems like most times we're calling a running play, we have only one wide receiver and two or more tight ends in a bunch configuration. Okay. Of course, the other team's defense then puts 9 to 10 players in the box to prevent the run. Wouldn't Adrian Peterson and our running game have a better chance of success if we lined up with four wideouts?
Got it. I get this question. I totally get where he's coming from. He's saying spread the field out, spread the defense out, but still run the ball. And I think that does make some sense. I don't think you can do that all the time, but I don't think you should never do it. And it just seemed like we saw mostly, you know, heavy personnel to run the ball in Tennessee. Totally get where he's coming from. Either way, the defense is probably going to go hat for a hat plus one against the Vikings. So whether you've got them spread out or whether you have your goal line personnel out there, I think the numbers are going to be the same. It's just a question of how much space do you want there to be? The other thing to consider here, and Mike Zimmer said this in his press conference on Monday, is he basically said, I'm paraphrasing, I know that Tennessee was stacking the box, but we're still going to run the ball because we're not going to let them dictate what we do. We're going to dictate to them what we're going to do. So even if they try and stop the run, we still have to try and stop the run. We still have to try and run the ball. Because if you just see an eight-man box and check out of the run every single time, now they've neutralized your best weapon, which is Adrian. So the fact that the Vikings kept running the ball the way they did, even though it didn't produce yards, it kept Tennessee committed with eight or nine guys into the box, which allowed Sean Hill to have 236 yards passing. It allowed Stephon Diggs to have over 100 yards receiving. So it's kind of a sword that cuts both ways. I would love to see more running out of spread formations. I think that'd be a cool thing to try, and maybe they'll do it this week against the Packers.
Final question. Ready?
I am ready.
Do you think the fact that AP didn't play this preseason like previous years may have been a factor? I expect him to get going next week. Also, with the depth we have at wideout, will we see Laquon Treadwell make an impact going forward with this offense? So yeah. Two parts of that question there.
Yeah.
So we'll start with Adrian.
Okay.
Do you think he should play in the preseason? You kind of answered this already.
I don't think so. I'm fine with him not playing. And even if it means – I don't know if he started slow this year against Tennessee because he didn't play in the preseason. I don't know if that's why. But even if an almighty being, football god, came down and was like, the reason Adrian only had 31 yards rushing is because he didn't play in the preseason, I'll still roll with not playing in the preseason to ensure that I will have him, or to increase my chances of having him for the regular season. So I'm fine with him not playing in the preseason. I don't think that's why the run game started slowly. I think it's because Tennessee overcommitted to it, and we made them keep overcommitting to it by running into those boxes, and we benefited by throwing over it at times. So I'm fine with it.
And let us not forget, he didn't play in the preseason last season. He's only the league-leading rusher.
Right.
So
I'm good with it. And I think it's one of those where I don't know that there's a right and wrong answer about playing your stars in the preseason. I can make a case for it both ways. And if next preseason Mike Zimmer decides to play Adrian, I'm going to be sitting there defending why you do that. So I think there's a lot of different ways you can do it, and I'm totally fine with him sitting out the preseason.
Back to Laquon Treadwell now.
Yeah.
You already sort of answered this one earlier too. Do you think he'll have an important part
for sure
of the offense going forward this season?
Yes, I do. And let's remember, Stephon Diggs was inactive for the first three games last year, and he ended up being an important factor for the Vikings on offense. I think Treadwell could be on the same path.
From the guys wearing purple, we'll now look at the guys wearing green, probably white this weekend.
Yeah, right? Lots of white and green and gold trim. Ugly. Oops. Super ugly.
It's not going to look good in that purple stadium.
My three-year-old, Isla, every time she sees the color green, she says, Boo Packers. Like that, instead of saying, that's green, that's Boo Packers.
She wouldn't like the cap of this pen.
No, she would say, that's a Boo Packers pen.
I don't know why I have this.
Jeez, get that out of here. Thank you.
Threw it away.
Yeah, Boo Packers.
The first Boo Packer we're going to talk about is their fearless leader, Aaron Rodgers. He's threat number one for many obvious reasons.
Yep. I have three notes next to Aaron Rodgers' name for the week. Functional mobility in the pocket. Really, really good at moving and sliding around in the pocket to buy time so he can still throw. Yes, he can tuck it and run and pick up yards as a rusher, but he's deadly as he slides and moves around the pocket to buy time to give his receivers a chance to break open. Another note I have is throwing on the run outside the pocket. If he does actually break the pocket, he can throw the ball down the field on the run with accuracy. And third, plaster coverage. So when he does break the pocket, our defensive backs have to find their man and plaster that guy, stay on him, because if you let up for a split second, Rodgers will see it and he will deliver a strike and you will be burned.
Linebacker Clay Matthews. He's been around there for a while now. He's moved inside. He's moved back outside. They asked Adrian earlier this week about whether that makes a difference. Adrian said, no, not really. I still have to run the ball.
Yeah.
But what kind of threat does Clay Matthews present?
Well, they were
the Vikings?
A pass rushing threat primarily, and off the edge, left side or right side. And they're moving him around to both sides, but primarily he's going to be going against Khalil. Now, Khalil is coming off a great game against Tennessee, watched every single one of the offensive snaps, and Matt Khalil had two bad plays. The very first third down, he got pushed back a little bit, and then there was another play later in the game. Other than that, super clean game for Khalil. This is a cool matchup when Clay is on that side. with him, though, last year, if you remember, they moved him inside because they had some injuries at inside linebacker. So they moved him inside on some of the base downs, and then in the sub packages, they'd move him outside, and he'd rush the passer. Now they have him only on the outside. So super gifted athlete, a knack for rushing the passer, and the Vikings now have an athlete on both sides who can battle with Clay. I like the Khalil Clay Matthews matchup the best. I think Andre Smith, though, who's good in pass protection, can handle it too. Super fun matchup to watch.
Finally, Randall Cobb, receiver. A lot of times in the slot, not all the time.
Yeah.
So Jordy's back. Randall Cobb's back.
Yeah.
Is Randall Cobb better for it?
Yeah, for sure. I like the Packers better when Jordy wasn't playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Dang, he's good. And he makes Cobb better. And I watched all of Green Bay's offensive plays. They lined Cobb up everywhere. They lined him up in the backfield. They motioned him to the backfield. They lined him up in the slot. They lined him up out wide. And they even lined him up in the pistol behind Aaron Rodgers. So they do a lot of different things with him, and he'll be all over the place. When he's in the slot, I think you'll see Captain over him quite a bit, so that'll be a matchup to watch. But when he's in the backfield, they'll throw it to him. They'll hand it to him. They'll pitch it to him. The coolest thing I saw them do with Cobb is they had him lined up in the backfield with Rodgers in the gun and Jordy Nelson in the slot. They had Jordy run a crosser, and then they had Cobb run an angle route, which is he jets out to the flat and then takes a sharp turn toward the middle of the field. So he was trailing Jordy Nelson. Jordy runs a crosser, which takes the linebacker with him. Cobb running right behind him, trailing Jordy, wide open. Really cool play. Got to watch out for that. I love what Green Bay does with Randall Cobb.
All right, let's move on to over-unders.
Okay.
Cordarrelle Patterson kickoff returns. Let's put the over-under at 0.5.
Right.
You think the Packers learned a lesson from his 61-yard kickoff return last week?
Packers coaches and scouts, earmuffs. Why would you ever kick to this guy? I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah, so it should be under. This should be under. I mean, you should not kick to him. But I'm going to say over because it's an ultra-competitive league, and coaches and players, the reason they get up to this level is they are competitive. That's part of the reason. And so they're going to devise a scheme where they think they can take advantage of the Vikings being aggressive with Patterson. And so it's hard to blame them for that because that's how they're wired. But I do think they're going to kick it to him, and I think Cordarrelle is going to make them pay.
Over 0.5 kickoff returns. Well, let's move on to Aaron Rodgers. We talked about him earlier. We're going to put his passing yards, the over-under, at 251.5.
Yeah.
Why did you pick that number?
Yeah, well, he had 212 and 291 against us last year, and he had 199 last week. So that's, I've kind of factored in all of those. I threw out the 199 last week, and I just did what he did against us last year and averaged those two, and 251.5 is the number. I don't want Coach Zimmer to get mad at me, but I'm taking the over here, and here's why. If Green Bay beats us, it probably means that Rodgers had a good day, and so he'll be over this number. But I think we're going to win. That means Green Bay is going to be losing, particularly in the fourth quarter, and they're going to try and come back, and they're going to throw the ball like the whole half, whole second half, and that will help Rodgers get over this number as well. So I think the Vikings are going to accomplish their goals of making Green Bay a one-dimensional team, which Mike Zimmer said they wanted to do. I think they'll shut down the running game with Eddie Lacy and James Starks, and they'll make Rodgers beat him through the air. I think Rodgers will get his, but it won't be enough. So I'm over this number, but I think the Vikings are going to win the game.
Everson Griffin sacks. Everson always gets up for every game, but you know he's going to be a little extra amped for this game probably. Do you think he'll get more or less than 1.5 sacks? That'd be a big game for him.
Yep. All right, I had a cool moment this week at Winter Park, and Everson Griffin was involved. After practice on Wednesday, I had to go out and get Daniil Hunter and bring him into the studio so Paul Allen, voice of the Vikings and host of Vikings Game Plan, could interview Daniil for Vikings Game Plan. So I'm walking into the studio with PA and Daniil, and Everson Griffin is like 5 steps behind us, and he sees Daniil coming into the studio to do a little showtime. And in a joking way, he's like, what is this? The guy gets one sack and one touchdown in the first game of the season, and you guys are already bringing him in there to interview him on TV. And it was kind of like, so I sensed a little like envy from Everson with his fellow defensive end, Danielle Hunter. So I think Everson is ready to eat this weekend. And I think he will get the best of David Bakhtiari, and he will get to Aaron Rodgers at least 1.5 times. So I'm over on this one. I'm feeling kind of generous in over-unders.
You are.
Three overs.
You are. It's a generous week.
Right. It's just we're so full of generosity.
Yeah.
All right.
We are always here.
Okay. Let's finish this thing up. We've been making these people listen long enough.
It's true. Color Rush uniforms came out this week.
Pretty cool. I liked ours.
I do like ours. It was fun to. We had a little cool Monday evening shoot session here in the studio
with the mannequin.
With the yes, with the mannequin, yep. Which is an adventure. It was an adventure getting it here, undressing, redressing,
right,
and getting it back to Vikings locker room store at Mall of America.
But he/she was very cooperative.
Very cooperative. Didn't hear a word. Right. Not a word of complaining.
Very cooperative mannequin.
So we thank you, Mannequin. We thank you, Vikings Locker Room Store.
Yeah.
The Mall of America. You can, I assume, get some of the Color Rush gear there.
Yeah, it's there.
It would make sense to sell that.
Pretty cool.
It's different
and
cool. Like I said, I like it. Well, besides the Vikings, what was your favorite Color Rush uniform that was unveiled?
I loved the Giants.
They had the old helmets, too.
Yeah. I hate to say it. Oh, I just hate this. Seahawks. Kind of a cool green.
You like that bright green?
It's kind of cool. I believe the Cardinals. I saw a team that was black, and I think it was the Cardinals went with all black instead of their red.
Mm-hmm.
Thought that was pretty slick. That's what stands out to me, I think. The Jets, why do they have the green shoulders? Did you see the Jets?
Yeah.
They wore them on Thursday night. They had green patch on their, so they had the white uniforms,
but
the green patch on their shoulder. I thought they should have gone with white there. But
all out white. I don't know.
All the money that's raised.
We don't make those kind of decisions.
Right.
Especially for the Jets.
We don't. And that's good. All the money that's raised, I believe, or at least a big part of the money that's raised from the Color Rush merchandise goes to a charity. So that's a cool thing the NFL does.
That is cool.
Yeah.
That is cool. Eric Kendricks. Your
defensive player of the week. That's what you were trying to say.
Yeah. I'm just so excited for him. Right. I can't even spit it out.
Right. He had 7 tackles, but most importantly, when you get Defensive Player of the Week, you do something super splashy. Scoring a 77-yard touchdown off an interception return qualifies as such.
That is splashy.
Defensive Player of the Week. Mike Zimmer's had a lot of guys earn defensive or offensive or special teams players of the week during his tenure here. That's a good sign of what's going on with your team.
The first of this season.
Yep. First of many. And lastly, skull stories. Nate, how'd it go for the first week?
I think it went pretty well.
Yeah.
It sounds like Paul Allen was listening in. He tweeted about it, so that was
good.
Cool.
All right, good.
I think it was pretty well received for the first episode. Tell the people what it is.
Skull stories.
In case they didn't, in case by some weird circumstance they missed the first episode.
Yeah, skull stories. 6:30 p.m. every Tuesday during the regular season, Nate Vaughn and I will bring you skull stories. It'll be broadcast on KFAN. FM 100.3 for those of you locally. You can also catch it on iHeartMedia on your iHeartMedia app on the KFAN channel. You can also catch
it on the Vikings mobile app.
On the Vikings mobile app and on Vikings.com. So for you to not catch this, there is no excuse.
You're trying not to listen to it.
It's
and that's
everywhere.
Making us pretty upset.
Right. It's everywhere. And it's cool because it's not just, no offense to these guys, but it's not just like, you know, Charles Johnson or Stephon Diggs or Jerick McKinnon. We love those guys. We can get those guys anytime. This is big timers in Vikings history. For example, the first one was Matt Burke last week. We're going to have Fran Tarkenton and Bud Grant. We're going to have the Purple People Eaters on the show. So big time names, skull stories. It's a 30-minute conversation that we have with someone who's got a profound place in Vikings history. We let you into that conversation so you can gain an understanding of why they have such a unique place in history and why fans love them so much. So skull stories, 6:30 p.m. on Tuesdays. Lots of different ways to catch it. I host it. Nate produces it. And we have a lot of fun doing it. And we had a lot of fun doing the Wobcast.
We did.
Yeah.
You ready for the game?
Yeah.
It's exciting.
I'm super pumped. Oh, last thing on the game. I'm not hedging for a loss here, but like after this game, there's going to be a lot of, oh, you won that game. You're going to the Super Bowl. Oh, you lost that game. you're in trouble.
Right. Next year.
Avoid that.
Yeah.
Avoid that, folks. Regardless of what happens, there are 14 more games to go. And next week's game against Carolina counts as much as this week's game against Green Bay, minus the division implications, of course, that come with playing the Packers. But long season to go, long way to go. Lots of stuff's going to happen. So be excited. Get amped up. It's a really important game, division rivalry, a share of first place on the line. So it's a big game.
Our bosses would tell you to get there early.
Yes, you should get there
early. Enjoy the pregame festivities in and outside of the stadium.
The people
be a lot going on all day.
The people using my tickets are arriving at 4 p.m. Just to give you a clue of what you're competing with for those of you listening who will be at the game, get there early.
And kickoff is?
7:30-ish.
Yeah, so that's a decent amount of time.
Get there early.
Yeah.
Enjoy the legacy ship. Enjoy the legacy bricks. Enjoy the beautiful stadium. Check out the ETFE roof. All that stuff, the big boards, and then get into your seats and prepare to be thoroughly entertained for more than 3 hours. And hopefully there'll be a victory. And, whether there is or there's not, we're going to be back with another edition of the Wobcast next week to talk about it.
True.
And to talk about the Carolina Panthers, which is who the Vikings have in week 3. So lots going on. You've made it all the way to the end of a marathon Wobcast. Congratulations. We thank you. On behalf of producer Nate Vaughn, I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw. Have a great weekend. Have a good game Sunday, and we'll talk to you next week. So, yeah!